Did you just congratulate me for reading?
Why so serious?
First name Rashid, last name Harding. This is BiblioTalk. Let's get started. Y'all know the drill. 7 questions, 7 answers from my brain to your ears. Today's title is Model Minority by Cory Doctorow. If you listen to my last episode, this is the second novella in the collection Radicalized, written by the author of the same name. Each one of these stories has some kind of connective tissue with the general theme that Cory Doctorow himself usually explores ideas in, but I'm approaching each and every one of these stories as their own contained world. And every single one of the stories is, of course, very different, but there are some overarching themes that may pop up that you will be able to connect easily to one another. But with that being said, this series of novellas, short stories really, started with Unauthorized Bread, and the second story is called Model Minority. I do want to go ahead and say, based on my first episode about these particular stories, I went on a fanboy fest about Cory Doctorow's writing and what he does with technology and teaching through entertainment. And I really stressed how, at a certain point in my episode, I really stressed how a lot of his stories, I might have gone so far as to say all or most of the ones that I've read, at least, of his stories, don't really have that factor of suspending your disbelief, because he explores ideas in this very realistic space. He starts with concepts of technology and economics that are very real, that you can see if you look outside right now. And then he expands on those concepts just like one level at a time by using a story, by using a narrative, by using very interesting, well-rounded stories and characters and settings and so forth. But each incremental evolution of that concept feels very natural because he starts from a place that is very, very, very recognizable in terms of the real world. Whether or not you know much about the topic that he is exploring, you aren't starting from a space that is completely fabricated in terms of science fiction or what have you. The reason I mention that is because this particular story throws all of that out the window. I believe the main thing that is driving this kind of shift from his status quo, surface level status quo, let's say, because it's still very much a Cory Doctorow story. But I think the main thing that's causing the shift of his surface level status quo is there's no technology involved in this. Like, there's none whatsoever. This story is exploring a theme that is strictly, it's about corruption, and it's about people, and it's about systems of feelings, right? Not systems of machines, not systems of technology and how they structure things. This story is really about human beings. A lot of his stories, well, very much involved with human beings. I mean, come on. The kind of the shell, the exoskeleton of the entire story is usually wrapped with this technological basis, this basis in some kind of invention, some kind of innovation, some kind of future thing that we are experiencing today, right? I mean, a lot of really good, what you would consider hard science fiction, which I just found out about less than a year ago, is it's grounded in something that people have written papers about, that people are testing in laboratories right now. You talk about teleportation and telepathy and telekinesis, none of that stuff exists, no matter how hard you look. But I mean, you want to talk about like tracking algorithms and artificial intelligence and you know, kind of that deep science stuff that we've seen happen, that we've seen occur, you can create really cool stories from that by just kind of going at this incremental, natural, what I'm calling a natural pace of evolving the concept. So even once you get to the point where nothing about the world is real anymore, nothing about the world of the story is real, can be confirmed in reality, you still feel grounded in reality because where you started from, it wasn't a stretch. This story does not do that at all. And on top of that, it's about people. So you guys are going to figure out what I mean once I get into this. So we're going to go ahead and start off with question one. What does this book teach me about books? What I settled on in terms of this question, kind of two things I wanted to point out. One is the more realistic you try to make something that isn't real, the more fake it can become. This story is so funny because I addressed this in the first episode concerning Cory Doctorow's stories. Like, I use this example and I use it as a way to prove that he doesn't do this stuff, and then he does this. So, but bear with me. This story is literally about Superman. Now, he's not allowed to call him Superman, obviously. I mean, he's not plagiarizing. You know, it's kind of like a parody, you know, like a regression? That's not the right word. I'll find the right word later. Of like superhero stereotypes. But it's not a comic book. Like, it's not about, like, you know, is too much power a good thing when taken out of the context of invading aliens? Like, no, he's not talking about superheroes. But it's about a superhero. This dude is a carbon copy of Superman. And you've seen this a billion times in comic books themselves, as well as movies, as well as books. Someone tries to take the mythos, right, the cookie cutter image of a superhero, and apply it to the real world to make for more interesting stories. One very clear example of this that is a bit more recent is what people now know as the Amazon TV series, The Boys. This is a comic series originally, but it was adapted into an Amazon television series. The Boys is about a CIA organization whose main task is to control the superhero population. So on the surface, everybody sees superheroes as these things that we're all used to, right? Justice League, Avengers, there are good guys, there are bad guys, there are petty criminals, and there are superpowers everywhere. The Boys know that superheroes deep down are really messed up. Who wouldn't be messed up with that kind of power? So their main mission is to keep those superheroes in line. That's the main story. Of course, the writer of this story, he's all about breaking down concepts and going all the way to that dark, deep end with stuff. Like, it's completely dark, it's completely vile, it's all over the place. But it talks about people just in a very negative light. This isn't usually the case, but it's very fun and it gets clicks and it gets, you know, it sells stuff when you try to talk about someone who is a moral super being and you turn them into this warped version of themselves. For some reason, that's entertaining. I'm not going to explore why that's entertaining right now. But the point is, this has been done before. What Cory Doctorow is doing with his superhero reimagining, he wants to talk about race. You imagine Superman, or Batman, or Wonder Woman, or Captain America, or Iron Man, or any other of the next 100 superheroes that you could name, if I told you to name 100 right now. 99% of them are white. What's funny about that is, black people read comic books, as well as people of other races. Right? So you get to a point in history where it's like there's a business side of it and there's a cultural side of it. The cultural side is artists exist in all shapes and sizes and colors. We're going to start telling our own stories eventually. Right? So you have pioneers of this stuff in science fiction even. Right? that are just like writing science fiction stories with black, with a black audience in mind. And then you get to comic books and the business of that, the industry, where they're like, we could sell more of this stuff if the characters looked like the people buying it. So you get Black Panther, who was created by Stan Lee, right? Who's a white guy. You know, Black Panther wasn't the idea of any black people, right? But Black Panther comes out, you have this African king, black kids and adults around America are like, oh snap, finally a story about someone like me. So that's all cool. When you try to take the concept of superheroes and kind of warp that, and you want to focus, you want to hone in on race, Cory Doctorow is doing something very interesting here, where he is talking about a superhero who is white. You imagine the quintessential superhero with the red flowing cape and the flying and the laser eyes and the stronger than a 100 bears or whatever the freaking phrase is. I mean, I know it's not that, but, you know, Superman is strong. Superman can fly. Superman can move super fast. Superman has laser eyes. He's a white guy. He's always a white guy. It's a power fantasy for nerds. What does that dude think about race? How does that dude address race? How does that dude respond and move and navigate within, throughout, and adjacent to race? It's an interesting question. I can't think of other examples that are very prominent when it comes to that sort of thing. You know, again, you talk about like Milestone Comics, for example. That was, you know, those were black creators, black authors and artists who came together and were like, this is going to be our own comic book line where we just launch our own universe of superheroes who look like us, right? And that eventually got absorbed by DC. And then you get characters like Static Shock and Icon and all these other characters that have kind of faded into obscurity with the exception of Static Shock, who's a big name now. But it's like, yeah, you know, you can talk about race with those characters because that's what people who look like them talk about all the time. It's a big deal when your race is a problem for you, right? It's something you talk about. If you're a white person, your race isn't a big deal. It's not. You can make it a big deal, and it just looks hilarious to people who don't ascribe to your beliefs, right? Where it's like, white people are better than everyone. Well, no, they're not. There's no evidence of that, but okay, you can think that. On the flip side, when you say black people are not smart, it's like, you can't say that because that's not true. So now I have to prove myself. You know, as a black man, I have to go out there and say, well, guess what? I'm not a thug. Well, guess what? I'm not a rapper. Well, guess what? I'm not a basketball player. Nothing wrong with being a basketball player. It's just because I look like this doesn't mean I'm gonna only good for one thing, right? So it's like the dynamic is different when it comes to race. So it's like white people, when it's time to talk about race, it's like, well, how do I navigate another person's race, right? I'm put on a pedestal, either internally or externally, either by my society or by my environment, and that pedestal gives me a perspective that can be good or bad, depending on the kind of life that I choose to lead. If you have a superhero, his job is to save people, but he's white. What does that mean? So Cory Doctorow has to answer that question. So when I say, what does this book teach me about books? When my answer of, you know, the more realistic you try to make something that's fake, the more fake it can seem. Superheroes aren't real, right? So you have a superhero and he can do all this crazy stuff. Cool. And it's like, okay, well, let's make him more realistic. Let's explore all those themes that I just finished talking about, right? Let's apply all of that to a Superman. So you're trying to make something that's fake more realistic. It can be done, it has been done, and it has been done very well. The problem here, in my opinion, is you're talking about a human being. Well, not a human being necessarily, but a person who lives among people, who sees people, who interacts with people, who grows up with people and their problems and their perceptions. But he has this moral obligation that he puts on himself, right? Because of these abilities he has. And you can't expect someone to believe that he would just be so tone deaf. And that's what the story explores. It explores tone deafness in terms of race, in terms of corruption. It explores that in a very cool way. But you can't, suspending your disbelief with the superhero in the beginning of this story, which again, Cory Doctorow does not do that very often. He doesn't typically require that you suspend your disbelief. But when you suspend your disbelief for a Superman, and then you build from that suspension of disbelief a categorization of a story where important socioeconomic themes are applied to someone's perception of the world, well, then you want to do that from the onset, right? You want to do that before you suspend your disbelief, because a person is going to be affected by these socioeconomic problems. A white person growing up in America is very aware of race to some extent, right? I mean, they exist. You know, you have people who are like, you know, I never had a black friend, I never had a white friend. I mean, yeah, that exists. I mean, that's part of the problem, right? But it's not like they don't know anything about it. When you explore a tone-deaf superhero, it's as if you're saying he's a blank slate and he's going to wake up to the fact that he's a white guy. If that makes any kind of sense, I'm going to explore that in much more detail later. But in a much more shortened way, I would say a white superhero who wakes up one day and realizes that black people have terrible lives on average, that doesn't seem like a realistic thing when I've already accepted that a superhero is a realistic thing. So there you have it. Another sub-answer to what does this book teach me about books is the futility of conversation. In the hands of power, you have boardrooms, you have committees, you have conferences, councils, you know, United Nations, all that stuff. And it's like the seats of power, and you put them on the television screen, and you put them on the radio, and you put them in the newspaper, and it's like, oh, if only they could just talk about their differences, if only they could just negotiate trade deals and tariffs and war arrangements. And it's like, you're not going to talk your way out of power. You're not going to talk your way out of what power does to people. You're not going to talk your way out of the inequality that comes from power that is not deserved, from power that is fueled by corruption. When your power is fueled, when your power relies on corruption, right? There's no conversation that can affect that. Not a conversation, right? You can teach people stuff. You can keep the history going, right? You can write books, you can give speeches, you know, rallies, all this different stuff. You teach things. You continue the knowledge. But when the story is about power and dynamics and inequality and corruption, when the story is centered on that theme, exploring conversation shows how futile it can be. So this story does teach me that just like the futility of conversation is massive in the eyes of power. So, question number two. What is this book's promise? Same promise as last time. I'm just reading the book description of the entire collection and applying that to the story itself. I'm quoting now. If you want a better future tomorrow, you're going to have to fight for it today. Here are four urgent social, technological, and economic visions of the world today and its near, all too near, future. From immigration and toxic economic stratification to the corrupt justice system and the dangers of the dark net, Radicalize lifts the veil on issues of today and the threats we face tomorrow with Cory Doctorow's trademark sharp wit. End quote. I already said in my episode on Unauthorized Bread that I'm not going to rehash, you know, everything that has to do with the collection itself. I just kind of introduced my thoughts and feelings on that in my first episode of this particular series. I just want to go ahead and kind of give my rounded opinion. It's not really opinion, my reflection, my analysis of what this book is trying to accomplish with its promise. What Cory Doctorow's shtick is to teach by entertaining. That is vastly different, in my opinion. I recognize that as a different thing from entertaining through teaching, right? It's the difference between a fun teacher and a knowledgeable comedian, right? It's like, what do I learn from having fun versus what fun can I have while learning. So Cory Doctorow is the former version of that. It's like, I kind of wrote this down earlier because my brain was going there. It's like Miss Frizzle versus Dave Chappelle. You know, it's Miss Frizzle from the Magic School Bus. By the way, why is it a magic? I've never, you know, if you listen to any of my other episodes, I don't like magic just as a concept, but it's like, okay, why is it the Magic School Bus? He's just a transformer. Like, there's nothing, I mean, it's a bus. Like, it doesn't have to be, anyway, whatever. It's a machine. It doesn't have to be magic. It's a machine. You don't call the Transformers magic. You know, they're machines. They just do something that their technology allows them to do. It's not making any spells. Anyway, Magic School Bus, Miss Frizzle, super fun teacher, right? She's teaching, but she's making the process of teaching a fun thing. You know, she walks into class, all of her students are looking at her. She's like, oh, we're going to learn about the moon today. It's like, oh my God, cool. And it's like, you can open a book and read about the moon. You can turn on a video and watch a documentary about the moon. Or you can get in the Magic School Bus and it's going to transform into a spaceship and we're going to go to the moon, right? That's entertaining by teaching. What Cory Doctorow does is he teaches you by entertaining you. That's kind of like with Dave Chappelle, the comedian. That's the stand-up comedian. That's kind of his shtick. I'm not going to say he has aspirations of being a teacher, but he doesn't hold back the fact that he's knowledgeable, or at least observationally knowledgeable, about certain topics at a very in-depth, nuanced level. And he's extremely funny. He goes on a stage, he goes on a Netflix special, he gives an interview. He's there to make you laugh, but you go and learn something. So Cory Doctorow teaches by entertaining, and that's kind of this book's promise in each of its subsequent novellas and chapters. So question three, how does this particular story start? Model Minority starts with police brutality. My goodness, is that timely. Police brutality. I don't have to really go into that. You know, this isn't the show that's going to educate you about police brutality. There's books, there's videos, there's... just Google it and you'll learn about it, right? I mean, seriously. And what a time to be alive where I can say that and it means so much. Just go Google it. That's not me being dismissive of the issue. I have very in-depth, very emotionally tied opinions and thoughts and reflections on the issues of police brutality. But in terms of the story, it's using that as a plot point, okay? Police brutality exists. You know, you have black people in a country that used to treat them as slaves, and it has not been long enough in historical terms, right? Like, historically, it has not been a relatively long period of time since black people were slaves. So the country, the culture, is still recovering from the trauma of, you know, being lesser versus being upper, right? White people were put on a pedestal, per se, for being the better race. And black people were expected to be stupid, expected to be subservient, expected to fail. So that just kind of, the leftovers of that flawed history is very present and very obvious in today's world, regardless of how hard different structures and institutions may try to hide that. It's just, it hasn't been long enough for it to not be affecting people every day at different levels and areas of society. So police brutality is one of those areas and levels of society where you have a cop and he's a white guy and he's a black guy. I mean, it's just, there's so much conditioning by media, by your environment, by your school history books, just by everything, your parents especially. There's too much conditioning to prevent. There's not enough prevention that can, what am I trying to say here? The conditioning of a white person, on average, will not allow for a favorable encounter with a black person when the white person is a police officer. It's just not, and why did I say that in such a weird way? But yeah, white cops, black people who aren't cops, black citizens, that just doesn't typically turn out well. I see a thug, I see danger, I see a drug dealer, right? I see someone who is intellectually incapable of being reasoned with just because he uses different words, right? Everyone who sounds black, that's in quotes, right? And you can, again, you can Google just the linguistics of black English and black vernacular, right? There's no, that stuff isn't random. That's not unintellectual. There are rules to speaking with black vernacular. Just like there's rules to speaking with British vernacular. I mean, what do we call British people, a weird English, or do we call American English weird English? I mean, yeah, you know, we kind of joke about that, right? Football versus soccer. But you don't say it's wrong. It's just a different language. Black English is literally just like a different language that people don't bother to try to understand when it doesn't apply to them. So like a black cop. Well, yeah, they exist too. But yeah, a white cop sees a black person talking in black English and he's like, okay, this dude can't be reasoned with. And it's like, no, you're just not conditioned to understand me. So that can lead to a lot of brutality, right? A police officer has power. Conversations are futile. The futility of conversation, which is what I was talking about. There's not enough negotiation to be had when it comes to surviving an encounter with the police, as a black man especially, but a black person in general. It's just not going to work. It's not going to work. We don't have the systems, we don't have the structures in place to discontinue that kind of outcome. So I said I wasn't going to dwell on that too much, and I kind of did already, but literally all of that applies to this story. It's about that, but it is from the perspective of Superman. So he's a parody of Superman. He's called the American Eagle, and he sees an encounter. You know, it's white cops. It's Rodney King style, beating up a black dude. What did he even do? Who cares? He's being brutalized. And so Superman intervenes. Isn't that wonderful that Superman would go out of his way to stop a white police officer from jacking up a black man? Does that go well? Does that go as expected? You really got to read the book to find out, because Cory Doctorow's approach to it, again, he's trying to apply as much realism as possible. So like, if you have a character like Superman, or the American Eagle, but I'm just going to call him Superman because he's literally Superman. You have a character like Superman, he's on the front lines of truth, justice, and the American way, right? It's all about truth and justice, and police, they are the arm of justice, right? So it's like, you don't really typically see Superman involving himself with police matters in terms of the police doing something wrong. You typically see Superman talking to a police officer or a SWAT officer or a general of the U.S. Army, where it's like, oh, this alien is here, help us stop him. Oh, these criminals have kidnapped Lois Lane. And he's like, yeah, let me be a supplemental arm of justice, right? In this particular situation, you have Superman turning the tables and being like, well, hold on, you have a responsibility to protect people. But in America, what is a person? Is a person white? Is a person black? Is a person both? Is a person a citizen? Is a person an immigrant? Is a person both? Like, it's just, there's so many different ways to define that, but there are very clear rules establishing personhood, establishing humanity, that America just has a really bad track record of dealing with as a young nation, right? Historically speaking. So it's like, you have this encounter and it goes the way it goes. It's not a spoiler to say it doesn't go well, but, you know, he intervenes, right? There is an effect of that. And there's an effect of that just sort of like a domino effect of everything that comes after that. Because what Cory Doctorow is doing is he's taking Superman and applying him to the world of cell phones and, you know, reactions, cancel culture, you know, just like all that stuff, all those different diet power that black people and minorities in general have kind of taken as their own to push back against oppression and brutality and stuff like that, right? We can't just wake up and snap our fingers and be like, hey, you know, I'm a person. And cop goes like, oh, right, I'm sorry for pulling you over for no reason. Right, you're just a person. Next time I pull you over, I'll make sure that you actually committed a crime. Like, no, we can't do that. But if you do pull me over when I didn't do anything except be black, I'm pulling out my phone and going on Facebook Live. So like, Cory Doctorow is applying that stuff to the story of Superman. So the book starts that way, and that's kind of when my questions start arising. They aren't fully realized until I start realizing how the book moves and ends. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into that right now. But yes, I do begin to ask the questions, or I get the itch of a question, or a few questions, really, when that interaction goes the way it does. Because again, what I've already said about this, what this book taught me is, there's this tone deafness that is trying to be emphasized in terms of the perspective of a white superhero and a black victim. And that tone deafness I find to be very unrealistic despite its attempt, despite its intent, right, to be a realistic device. So we'll go ahead and go on to question 4. How does this book move? It moves event by event. It moves conversation by conversation, right? So you have an event, a conversation, an event, a conversation. You have an event, you have repercussions, you have a conversation about the repercussions, which lead up to another event, because that conversation is never not heated, right? It's never not futile, and futility breeds frustration, and frustration. That futility of the conversation breeds frustration. That frustration breeds an event. So you have event, and then you have conversation. That's really how the book moves. It's a short story. You know, it's not super long. It's not super short, but it's not super long. So each of those event conversation combos are packed with socioeconomic detail. Cory Doctorow really tries to get into the characters' heads using those conversations. So he's kind of like on the sidelines talking about Superman's powers and like how he can tell when someone is lying by looking at their pulse with X-ray vision. And he can like hear, you know, a cop saying a racist remark with a super hearing. So it's just kind of like, it's this awareness that he has that is a really cool storytelling device, in the sense that if a person reading this story was not aware of these things, they are using a entertaining way to learn about them, right? It's entertaining to be in the mind of a super being who can kind of access areas of existence that we could not typically access, right? You know, what does the Earth look like from space? What does it look like when you travel at the speed of light? Yada, yada, yada. Superman has super hearing. He can hear the racist remarks that you may have never heard in your life. Superman has X-ray vision. He can tell when someone's lying, when black people can see and smell that bullcrap a mile away. So it's just kind of like, okay, here is a lens that is very useful for you, white geek, to apply to, you know, whatever you want to do. You know, you have a story, you go on, I like to say stories are a journey. You go on a journey, you come back home. So like after that journey, what did you learn? What happened to you, right? This is a really cool journey. You're in the eyes, you're in the boots, you're in the cape of a superhero. And he's waking up to the fact that racism exists. So let's go ahead and talk about that. The way they did Superman here is really interesting to me, because Superman has been around since the 19-whatevers, very long time. And it's like with comic books, there's always this emphasis on being contemporary, right? If you really think about Batman, if he has been aging since the first time he was introduced, 70-something years ago, well, he would be that old. But he's not. Like, in comic book continuity, he's not super old, right? He's still 40, 50, whatever, fighting crime, swinging off rooftops. But now he has an iPhone or a cell phone or optical nerve hologram AI thing in his cape, because it's like current contemporary devices, contemporary social structures, contemporary technology demands that he, as a character, evolve. So what Cory Doctorow does is he does that with Superman, and it's easier to do that with Superman because you can make the argument that a super being would be immortal. So because he's necessarily immortal, Superman's introduction, real Superman's introduction back in the 19-whatevers, he's been around for a lot of history, for a lot of civil rights, for a lot of civil disobedience, for a lot of police brutality. So in this particular story, with this particular rendition of the Superman cookie cutter character, what Cory Doctorow has done is he's taken the character and insisted that the character has been around since, you know, black people were still not allowed to sit in certain stores, right? Like, he's seen all of that happen. So this theme pops up in different places as the story moves, and it pops up within, of course, these conversations, right? Like, there are a lot of scenes of reflection, of Superman kind of going through his memories and going through his feelings, sure, but the feelings of a superhero is kind of hard when it's not really about, like, people they care about. So, like, those are kind of reserved for the other characters, and it's really funny because Cory Doctorow, like, goes out of his way to just be like, this is Superman. Like, there's literally a character called Bruce, and, you know, he's Batman. The story never calls him Batman, but he's a rich billionaire who, you know, fights crime alongside Superman whenever he feels like it. Like, this stuff is mentioned, but he just calls him Bruce. There's a Lois in this. She's not Lois Lane, but she's Superman's reporter or girlfriend. And so he has these conversations with these other characters who are obvious parodies of actual characters in comic book mythos. And the writer uses these character interactions to emphasize Superman's feelings about racism. I didn't really find those parts especially interesting because it's like, all of his friends are white people. So he's just, It's not really an echo chamber necessarily, because again, at the beginning of the story, at the onset, he's describing, not describing, he's putting himself in a position to affect, you know, civil rights, right? So everything that comes after that, every conversation, interaction that comes after that is about his new position, is about his new reflection, right? So it's like Lois is like, yeah, well, yeah, it's really nice that you're talking about black people, but like, what will the press think? And Bruce is on the side like, yeah, you know, black people really do suffer, man, but the military and Uncle Sam, they don't really want you to let the Negroes have an uprising. Like, they're saying this white people stuff, and it's like, okay. I'm not saying this isn't useful to the story, by the way. I'm just saying the story moves like that. So depending on who you are, what your background is, there's gonna be that futility of conversation. Who are you talking to? Who has the power here? On to my issue with realistic. I'm gonna try not to draw this out too much. What I meant when I was talking about him just now realizing that racism exists, and him continuing to be tone deaf, that's not realistic to me if this character has been around since, you know, the 1920s or 30s or whatever, because there's only two, ideally, right? There's only two narrative possibilities that this character would have been raised upon. Either he's the quintessential story of Superman, right? So both of these scenarios have Superman landing from a dying planet onto planet Earth in a rocket ship as a baby, and these two white farmers walk up to him and say, oh, this baby, let's adopt him as our own. And then they raise him as a Kansas boy, and then he grows up and realizes he has superpowers, and then he becomes a superhero, right? So both these scenarios have that superhero thing. And all of that requires what? Suspension of disbelief. Dying planet, alien powers, you have to suspend your disbelief. Now, if you're talking about him existing this entire time, this span of time, and now realizing that racial tension is a thing, these two scenarios don't allow for that, because either he was raised racist or he wasn't. Now, there's, again, plenty of room for the racist dude who grows up and realizes that there's no point to that, there's no value in that, and changes his ways. But this awakening is not that. This awakening is not him saying, oh, I've been racist my whole life, but they're just like me. That's not what this awakening is. This awakening is, hey, that black guy looks like he's in trouble, but the cops are doing it to him. I don't like this. And it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. Like, you're a superhero. What are you doing? Like, okay, an alien invades, blows up the White House. You're there in an instant punching the lights out of a foreign being who you might not even realize considers blowing up the White House his greatest gratitude or something, right? Like, we don't have to talk about that. The alien comes, he's speaking English, I will conquer the planet. No, you won't, because I have fists of steel, and there's a fight. Meanwhile, you have super hearing, you have super sight. You know that somebody out there is treating black people wrong on some bullcrap. That don't make you feel some sort of way until today? It took you today? It took you at least centuries, if not just decades, but at most, like, centuries to realize that? Like, come on, dude. What does that mean? So he wasn't raised racist and then he became non-racist because he had an epiphany. No, he has a bullcrap epiphany out of nowhere. The other scenario is he wasn't raised racist. His parents taught him true American, well, if you want to call him American, we can just say moral, taught him true moral values about how to treat people and how to consider oneself in the network of human interaction and life and treatment, right? If he was raised that way, this story doesn't exist. So here's the problem. You're applying a realistic scenario, a realistic, let's call it, well, I was saying, like, this exoskeleton of the story, right? You're trying to cover up the superhero story with this exoskeleton of realism, but it doesn't fit, like, the mold doesn't fit, because he's not starting from a place where that would work. He's not starting from anywhere where that epiphany would ever happen. If this is a white dude that's used to being white, it doesn't matter if he has superpowers or not. This is a white dude.
Like, unless he makes a black friend or grew up around black people or, like, went out of his way to study black history, right? Went out of his way to study the history of racism and the history of slavery. Like, unless that was a mission of his, he's not going to have an epiphany out of nowhere looking at a cop brutalize another. How many times have we seen that? And white people, you know, on, let me say the majority of white people, don't see a problem with that. Again, not dismissing every single white person in on the planet or in America isn't some racist piece of crap who, like, doesn't understand that the power dynamic that this country did, that this country implemented, affects them in a way that doesn't affect black people, right? Black people are in constant danger of things that are invisible to the white population. So if he is the white population, if Superman, as super as he is the white population, he ain't gonna never see that stuff, right? There's no reason for him to have that awakening. So whether he was racist or not, if he's been living since the dawn of whatever time he showed up in his little baby spaceship as a white guy, there's no sense in him now becoming a civil rights activist. And here's the crux of my argument there. The morality of the superhero. The suspension of disbelief when it comes to a super being involves their morality. The idea that you would get superpowers one day and say, guess what? I'm going to save the planet. I'm going to fight evil wherever I see it, or wherever I find it, or wherever it is, right? Superman can go anywhere in seconds, so he's not stuck in America. So it's like, that morality is in itself a super thing. It's a super morality. If Superman is the parody you're trying to make, if Superman is the mold, if Superman is the concept that you're trying to make realistic, his super morality isn't realistic then. We have to suspend our disbelief for his morality on the basis that he is the best person, the best guy. He's infallible. Now again, even in contemporary comics that aren't trying to be reductive, it's like, okay, he can still make mistakes. And he learns from them. The mistake of not saving black people when you have the power to do that is pretty glaring. There's no super morality that doesn't account for that. That doesn't account for police brutality. Doesn't account for civil rights. It doesn't account for black codes and Jim Crow laws. And man, this story talks about that stuff. Cory Doctorow did his research, right? Again, like I talk about this in my Unauthorized Bread episode. He gonna teach you some stuff. He's gonna entertain you first. And you gonna learn something about the world, about technology or about socioeconomics or about the future or whatever. So he gonna teach you about race. He gonna teach you about what black people go through. But he's gonna use a superhero lens and try to make it realistic. And to me, it just looks like the dude's a doof. He's doofy. He's completely tone deaf. I'm gonna emphasize that point with my next question. How does this book end? This book ends in a fashion that is a spoiler. But I'll make this less spoilery by saying that concept of the futility of conversation, it makes its mark at the end of the story. You can see all these events develop. Again, I haven't gone into any specifics whatsoever in terms of the fallout, right, of him intervening on this police encounter. There's just a domino effect. It's conversations, it's events, it's, you know, people saying things and making decisions that you might agree with and you might not, and you might go, oh my goodness, I can't even believe that exists without necessarily agreeing or disagreeing, right? It's just like a realization of things. This is the whole story. It's very active in terms of engaging your morality. You're asking yourself questions the whole time. That's Cory Doctorow in a nutshell, but this story in particular as it relates to race and, you know, again, police brutality in general. You're asking yourself these questions the entire time, but you're being entertained with superhero antics, right? He's flying around, he's doing stuff with his powers that give him the insight that other white people might not be able to have without those powers. So it's like, okay, cool. And the story kind of wraps up with that intact, right? At the end of the story, depending on who you are, and you can say this in general about any story, right? But I'm talking about in regards to this specific issue of racism, depending on who you are, you are going to ask yourself a very specific question at the end of this story. And it's going to be very different from someone who does not look like you. Right? People have different beliefs. People have different upbringings and different opinions. But in terms of how a black person is treated in America, or a minority in general, right? The story is called Model Minority, and that's kind of, you know, that's a joke in and of itself. If you are a non-white person in America, you're going to ask yourself a very specific question that is entirely different from a question that a white person will ask. I found that very, very interesting. But I'll address the spoilers after I finish my question. So question the sixth, what stands out in this story? We do talk about historical events in the context of a superhero having been there. That is very cool to me. That's very cool. I can't think of a lot of superheroes who were there in the past. We talk about like vampire hunters. Okay, cool. We talk about, you know, I mean, Star Wars is technically a long time ago, right? In a galaxy far, far away. So that's technically the past, but it's not the history of our world. Captain America, same thing. It's like there's a big chunk of his story that takes place during World War II, but just like the evolution of his story is about him coming awake in the 20th, 21st centuries. So there's history there. This story does that in a kind of, it gives it like its own touch, right? We're talking about race relations. And so like, you know, how is that addressed? And that kind of really stood out to me. Also, what stood out to me is, again, the parodies, how on the nose they are. Like, that was just funny to me. Like, you know, he's like, he's talking to Bruce. He's talking to Lois. Like, that's hilarious to me. So that did stand out. But outside of everything else I mentioned, I'm starting to realize that this question kind of answers itself with the episode behind it. But it kind of works out for me because if I do have spoilers, then I can just make space for that without having to spend too much time on what stood out. But in general, the things I just mentioned now didn't necessarily come up in a specific sense when I was discussing this book. So yeah, what stood out to me was just the blatant parody of the characters, as well as the historic lens of superhero existence. Question the seventh, will I read this again? No, I will not. It's too painful for me. I grew up, you know, kind of reading lots of comic books and stuff. Really looked up to these characters and everything. Not in a sense that I want to be like them. Like, I never had that sense. But superpowers are cool. So it's like, I like to imagine stuff. And even when it comes to my own writing and stuff, I like to play around with those similar concepts. Like, what does superpower really do to a human being? And again, writers are always trying to do that new thing to make it realistic. But, you know, I mean, it's pass or fail, right? Like, that's a hit or miss thing. If you try to make something fake more realistic, the point that I made about this story is it proves that you can make it more fake. But again, that's only if you have my opinion about a tone-deaf white guy superhero having an epiphany about the fact that he can affect race relations in America. So, like, if you think that is a realistic thing where it's like Superman, you know, would have that epiphany and would react the way he reacts in this story, then whatever. But me, like, I don't see that. I don't see him having that epiphany at all. And even if he did have that epiphany, I don't see him then turning around and doing what he did at the end of the story, right? So I'm going to discuss that in a spoiler fashion as soon as I wrap up. But yeah, no, I'm not reading this story again. It wasn't a bad story, though. I'm not saying that. Again, these aren't necessarily reviews. I will tell you if I like it or didn't like it, if I feel like it's important to mention that. And I do. I've really given this story a tough time. But it's very interesting. It's new. It's different. It can give you a perspective that you may not have had before with the cushion, right, with the safety net of entertainment. It's an entertaining read, always. But you're going to learn something. So there's an important factor in terms of this story. I'm not saying it's classic, but it's important in that sense. But I'm not going to be reading it again. So now I'm going to go ahead and address spoilers. Emmett Till. Let's give a moment of sadness of how horrible that was. Again, I'm not going to dwell too much on that. You can Google Emmett Till very easily and read the whole story about that. But basically, back in the Jim Crow South, black kid was alleged to have catcalled or whistled at a white woman. So white people found the boy, strung him up, killed him. No due process. Nobody got punished for that.
It's one of the big names. And it's horrible that I have to say that there are big names when it comes to this. But it's one of the big names in terms of unjust killings of black men in America. So, Emmett Till is discussed in this book. Emmett Till is discussed as an event that occurred during this superhero's lifetime. Emmett Till is discussed as an event that occurred during the superhero's lifetime in terms of him not doing anything about it. There's a lot of emotion behind that scene. There's a lot of tone deafness behind that scene on behalf of the character and to an allowable extent, because he's stepping into territory that he may not be trying to solve, but he is trying to play around with, but these are real things. But to a very small degree, there's tone deafness on the writer's part too, because again, no way do I suspend my disbelief of a super moral, super strong being who let something like that happen. And one of the characters in this story tells him that and lets him have it. And I don't like his response. Because he didn't have nothing to say. Which, yeah, you wouldn't have anything to say. But again, I'm not going to get super angry about that story because I don't find it realistic. It's not like I see in this story something that could have happened and I'm like, dang, that's infuriating. Right? You see, like, Darth Vader cut off Luke's hand and he's like, I'm your dad. It's like, well, you must be really evil because I'm your son and you just cut off my hand. But this story, it's not like I'm looking at this Superman and saying, wow, you must be a really callous, tone-deaf person to have not taken care of that. No, I look at it as no way would Superman, as he is characterized, even with all his flaws, no way would he have let something like Emmett Till happen. Or any of the other things that real-life history has given us on a filthy platter in terms of black people being oppressed. No way would he let any of those things happen. So that's how I clamp down and emphasize the fact that you try to make something fake more realistic, it just seems a lot more fake. And honestly, this is one of those topics that I wish you hadn't tried to make more realistic and ended up making it fake, because it's not fake. But yeah, no earmarks for this story. I already said I'm not going to read it again. And that's all I have to say about it. So that's all for now. Wrap up.